I'm Peter Medlin, and you are listening to Teacher's Lounge. And if this is your first time hearing our show, I've got great news for you. It's based on a really simple idea that we've all had teachers in our lives who helped us become who we are today. And every educator we have on this podcast, whether teacher, coach, or professor, is nominated by the folks who listen. We want you to be a part of this show with us. So please tell us about the educators who've inspired you and the folks in your community who deserve a spotlight. You can email us with your nominations and your story ideas at teachersLounge@niu.edu. And today on the show, it is my conversation with Andrea Gustafson. She's an English teacher, speech team coach, and head of the drama department at Morris High School. And Morris is also her hometown, so it's been really meaningful to build a career at the same school she went to and continue the legacy of the teachers who inspired her.
And I tell them that, like in my speech class, like I literally took speech in this room. And for those of you sitting there nervous and scared, like I was that kid, I tell them that story.
She's got a real passion for theater and for speech. And sometimes it's a little bit difficult to pitch students on why they should join the speech team.
I always laugh because when you describe speech team to a person, it sounds horrible. You get up early on a Saturday and put on a suit and give speeches. Like it,
and like speak in public, which people like hate generally.
Exactly. Like number one fear of people.
We talk about how she became passionate about speech, even after faking sick to get out of her first speech in high school. We also talk about theater, the importance of the community supporting school performances, and so much more. But before my conversation with Andrea, I've got another education story I want to share. Earlier this school year, hundreds of Rockford Public School students didn't receive their mandated occupational therapy. That's because the district didn't have enough therapists. And I've been investigating special education shortages in the district to learn why so many students went unserved for so long. And I got to talk with our news director at WNIJ, Jenna Dooley, about my findings.
Peter, a few months ago, you reported on a shortage of social workers in Rockford Public Schools. As you were doing that reporting, you started to hear from occupational therapists who had worked in the district about some of their concerns. So to start off, what does an occupational therapist do?
So an occupational therapist helps people participate in their daily lives, like work activities, things like that. And so, you know, what's an elementary school student's occupation? Well, their job is learning. So occupational therapists help kids learn how to use their hands with classroom materials like pencils and scissors so they can write and make art in class. And they also help many students with things like sensory processing. And I got to speak with Wendy Sigona. She just retired after over 30 years as an occupational therapist with Rockford Public Schools. And she says that over the past year or so, the district's made it more difficult for students to get that therapy they need.
And if you don't get those services early on, then it's very frustrating because they already are delayed and the gaps just get bigger.
How many students did this shortage impact?
So this fall, 400 Rockford Public School students sat on a wait list not receiving their legally required occupational therapy.
Why so many?
So the district says it was because of staffing shortages, but according to emails that we obtained, the district made the choice to significantly reduce its OT staffing levels.
What did you find about why they did that?
So Sigona believes that they were trying to save money by hiring therapists directly. Like many school districts, Rockford contracts with an outside agency, the Northwestern Illinois Association, for some of its special education services like occupational therapy. And last spring, Rockford abruptly informed that agency that they were going to be ending their contract, cutting all 18 of their occupational therapists. But the district discovered that legally they couldn't do that. So instead, they requested to reduce staffing at the maximum level possible in a single year under the contract, which was 25%. So it would take them down from 19 to 14 occupational therapists for this school year.
The Northwestern Illinois Association, what was their reaction to that?
In ensuing emails, NIA staff are very concerned. Their CEO, John Malone, asked Rockford Special Education Administrators what staffing formulas they used to calculate that they'd still be able to adequately meet student needs since there wasn't a reduction in the number of students who need occupational therapy.
And then how did the occupational therapists respond?
So Rockford also wanted to take over managing occupational therapy caseloads, and that sudden shakeup left their occupational therapists with a lot of questions and worried that they'd soon be out of a job. In April, Malone informed Rockford that three of their full-time occupational therapists assigned to Rockford had resigned, quote, citing the uncertainty about future working conditions within the Rockford Public Schools as the primary reason for leaving, and they're also anticipating another resignation imminently. And five total occupational therapists ended up resigning last spring. That includes someone we'll call Chris, who spoke to us and asked us not to use their real name. He worked at the elementary and early childhood level at Rockford for several years, and he said that he had to make the decision to leave for another job he knew would be more steady, and it was a very difficult decision because he did really love the work he did there. But again, he'd only been there for a few years, so he was afraid his position would be part of that 25% cut. But on top of that, he'd grown more and more frustrated with what he called a, quote, clearly coordinated decline of service by the district.
A clearly coordinated decline of service. What did he mean by that?
He says the district made decisions based on money, not on student needs. And Wendy Sigona was discouraged too. Wendy and Chris were both part of special education teams who evaluated students to see what services they needed and if they could succeed in a general education class or if they needed special programming. But she says more and more administrators were coming in more and more often to tell them that their placement evaluations were wrong.
And you can come and look at the kid for one blink of an eye and say, no, we're going to put him in regular program. We have to try it first because that's least restrictive. No, it's not least restrictive. If those kids aren't able to access any of the curriculum that's happening within that program.
So after cutting a quarter of positions and then having several OTs quit, how difficult was it for the district to hire enough therapists in time for the beginning of the school year?
It was really difficult, and even by the summer, they were still several occupational therapists short of what they requested. Now, by then, emails show that Rockford administrators acknowledged that even if they hired all 14 therapists they requested, it still might not be enough to meet student needs. And we asked Rockford Special Education Director Michael Raya if the district knew before the school year that students would have to be put on wait lists. Raya said no, but in an August email right before the first day of school, Raya sent over language therapists should use when asked about unserved students. He said, quote, the district is currently looking for more OTs and PTs. We are currently understaffed and therefore some students will be without services and need to go on a compensatory wait list. And the email finishes, quote, we are actively looking to fill our shortages in these positions, but understand the nature of our reality.
Were they ever able to hire enough occupational therapists this school year?
The district started filling OT positions throughout the fall semester, eventually getting even more than those 14 they'd originally asked for. And to cut down on wait lists, they also hired virtual occupational therapists to deliver therapy services over the computer. Raya says that 20% of students receiving occupational therapy are still receiving it virtually. And some therapists like Sigona say it's not very effective, especially if the paraprofessional, the person helping guide the lesson on the student side of the computer screen, doesn't have much experience with OT.
So much adjusting that you just automatically do with your skills in OT. And if you're doing that through a screen with someone else and explain the kind of adaptations that you want to be in place, you don't get very much done.
Even if they disagree, do therapists like Sigona say they understand why the district made these decisions?
No. Overall, Sigona is still confused about what exactly happened over the past year.
I just don't understand their reasoning, their thought process, what seems to be a lack of planning.
What's the situation like now? Are there still students on the waitlist?
No. So Michael Raya says that no Rockford students are currently on waitlists, but therapists like Wendy Sigona and Chris say that there wouldn't have had to have been hundreds of kids on waitlists in the first place if the district hadn't decided to cut so many positions with the Northwestern Illinois Association. They've worked with the agency for decades using this model of OT service delivery, and so they're still wondering why the sudden shift. And Chris not only quit working with Rockford, the experience made him leave education altogether, but he says he's not the victim here. He says the OTs will be fine, they'll get jobs other places. It's the families who suffer, and he says that he doesn't see the district worried enough about that. And a spokesperson for the Northwestern Illinois Association says that they remain committed to supporting all of their district partners, including Rockford, in meeting their occupational therapy needs. That was my conversation with our WNIJ news director, Jenna Dooley, about my investigation into occupational therapy shortages in Rockford Public Schools. All right, without any further ado, it's time for my conversation with Morris High School English teacher Andrea Gustafson, and we start off by talking about the end of her speech team season.
Yes, we're very excited. So we're our speech season will end this week. We're taking 6 events to the IHSA state finals in Peoria this weekend. So it's, you know, Morris has had students at the state tournament for the past 16 years, which is very exciting. I feel very proud of that. You know, that's the hard work of a lot of people over a long period of time. So it's always that, you know, culmination of the season. And when you get to end it at state, it's very cool experience. So yeah, I'm very excited for the weekend. So
how are the students competing? How are they feeling? Is it excited? Is it a good mixture of that and a little frenetic, like how are they feeling right now?
There's always that. So we go through for speech team, if you aren't familiar with that process at all, there's sort of invitational season, which is for us at least is kind of December, January. And then February brings the state series. So that's where the nerves and the, you know, really, because you hit tournaments where you have to place a certain way to keep your season going. So at regionals, you have to be in the top 4. At sectionals, you have to be in the top 3 to get to state. So I think sectionals is probably almost where the nerves and adrenaline and stress maybe is the biggest, because it's that like last hurdle you have to jump to get to that state final. But we're just very proud. I mean, we're a smaller school and there's no class division in speech. So it's not like there's 1A, 2A, 3A, 4A, like a lot of things. So you're competing against, you know, huge programs throughout the state. And I'm very proud of the program that we have and how dedicated the kids are and how much they care. And not just the current kids, but our alumni too. Like we always say we're a family, and I feel like maybe that sounds cheesy a little bit, but I think there's something, it is kind of a second family. You know, I really do feel that way. So it's a good thing.
Yeah, I think I mentioned to you, but a year or so ago, I got the chance where we did a segment where we followed a group of students, and it was DeKalb's speech team. You know, we interviewed them once a month, every month throughout their season. To like kind of follow that, the trajectory of the year through their voice and stuff. And so I really like got the chance to, because I didn't do speech when I was in school. So I really got acquainted with how, like, not only the categories and how it works, but also just like the passion behind it. It was really fun. And like, again, like this is months and months of work that's being poured into it. And the thing that I always thought was like so fascinating to talk with the students about is how they were telling me about how they felt like the skills and approaches and lessons that they learned through speech, you know, through the actual team, also like helps them just be a better communicator in their day-to-day life, just a more confident communicator with like the people they care about, which I thought was just a really like beautiful thing that people don't maybe consider when they think about.
Well, and not just communication ability, but I think leadership and creativity. And one of the things that I think is really important about speech team, and this may not even sound like a positive when I say it, but just being able to take criticism, I think is huge. You know, they get judged every round and they get told, here's great things you did and here's things that you could or should do differently. And I did speech in high school. I felt like that was something when I became a teacher and I sat in methods classes and student teaching where people observed and watched. Like I had friends that were in my education programs that would just be destroyed because, you know, someone told them they did this incorrectly or needed to do this. And for me, I was like, that's speech, that's theater. Like you're constantly getting that feedback. So you get used to hearing that and being able to understand that and apply it. So there's so many, I always tell people your kids should be giving speech team a try. There's so much, I think, value in that program. So, and Greg Solomon and TJ Fontana at DeKalb are two of the best. They're coaches that I look up to immensely. So great team to choose to follow around. They're a great program.
I lucked into it, but it was really, really fun. But, you know, I think about how, you know, you're two main things that you coach, right? Between speech and between drama and between theater. Like those are two specific things where you really want students to put themselves out there and really come out of their comfort zone, and also see a lot of students coming into it for the first time really, really nervous and start to see that confidence build. And that's also like, it's a difficult environment to foster, right? For people to be comfortable putting themselves out there. It's something that you know, is easier said than done, right? That we need people to be comfortable, but also feel comfortable being challenged and putting themselves out there. I'm curious how you've learned to approach that, both as a classroom teacher, but again, in these like very performance forward spaces.
Yeah, I always laugh because when you describe speech to a person, it sounds horrible. Like it's a very hard, you know, like you want a kid to join the basketball team or the track team. It's kind of inherently, you know what that is. Speech, the description is you get up early on a Saturday and put on a suit and give speeches.
Speak in public, which people hate generally.
Exactly. Like number one fear of people. So
it, not only like you're afraid of giving a public speech, but then also you are, like you said, critically judged on it immediately afterwards.
Exactly. And we got on a bus this Saturday at 5 a.m. Like there's that whole component too. So it's a lot. You know, one of the best parts to kind of maybe come at this from the backwards perspective, but one of the things that I just absolutely cherish about doing this job is watching seniors, like the seniors I have right now, a couple of which are going to state, and even whether they're going to state or not, that's not even the point. But when you think about where they were as freshmen, sophomores, when they came in as these, you know, very unsure, not confident, can I do this? Do I want to do this? And somewhere along the way, it's kind of what you said. The competition's fun, but I think they start to realize what they're learning and how important being able to speak and to listen too is really, really important. So we do a lot of peer kind of coaching on my team. That's something that's really important to us. So we have event groups and captains so they're not just coming in and speaking in front of a coach, adult coach that might be, you know, a little bit scarier maybe at times.
Yeah, of course.
They kind of start out in small groups and get, you know, feedback from their peers. And I've found that's really been beneficial in helping some of them feel more comfortable and more confident. I think that's been really important. And I do that in my classes too. You know, sometimes some small group kind of things where they'll discuss things or do things in small groups before they have to speak in front of the whole class. So hopefully those kind of things help. I think they do.
Yeah. And that's where the team helps a lot when you're doing something as frightening to some people as public speaking, is that you not only have your coaches to back you up, but like it'd be way scarier if it was just like, I'm on my own going to get up at 5 a.m. on right. Saturday and drive to Mendota or wherever it is that you guys are doing something.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's such a great skill. And I'm always I love to walk around, like they'll be in pockets around the building, like practicing. And I just love to walk by and hear them talk to each other and say positive things. And like, sometimes I'll hear them say things kind of the way I say them, because I know they've learned some of that modeling from me. But then other times they'll say things that I'm like, that's impressive. Like I need to say something like that. Like that's great. So it's just, you know, I still learn from them too, which is great. So,
yeah, but it's gotta be funny for you with that much experience when you have freshmen who come in and are really nervous and they're like, I don't know how I'm going to do this, to be like, listen, I've seen this before. And like, you know what happens when they reach the other side of that and you see them as seniors, when they're giving that feedback and helping coach the seniors, to be like, you can trust, just like try to trust me a little bit. I know how to get you there. I've seen it hundreds of times.
Yes. And the older kids are the ones that drag some of those kids in saying those things like, you'll be okay. Like it's really hard at first, but you'll be okay. So they're kind of my ambassadors that are out there, you know, really keeping the program going. I mean, they're the ones that are pulling those kids in, but it's so cool. Like we had a freshman on our team this year, that did, I think two, if you know speech team at all, I think people would argue two of the toughest events, hard to quantify that, but extemporaneous speaking and impromptu speaking, those are the events where you don't have a speech when you get to the tournament, you
off put the cuff.
And we had a freshman do that event this year, and ended up being our top impromptuer and got that spot on our regional team and our sectional team and made it all the way to sectional final, which is huge for anybody. But as a freshman in a tough event like that, that's just huge to me. And I think if you'd said to that young man in November, like, hey, you're going to be a sectional finalist, he would have said, crazy. Like, there's no chance of that. And, you know, he's got 3 more years now to hone those skills, and like where he'll go will be super exciting. But, and he's just one example of you know, what you see when they work hard, and he's still super nervous, but so proud of him, you know, when making sectional final. I mean, I just, those successes are pretty cool. So I never get tired of those ever.
No. And I'm sure, I mean, you remember being, you know, when you were a student coming in, being very nervous about, you know, whether it be speech or drama performing for some of the first times.
Absolutely. Yeah, I always tell the kids when I was a sophomore in high school, I was a very like follow the rules, very good little student. And I had to give a speech in speech class, and I begged and begged my mom to let me stay home. I told her I was sick because I didn't want to do it. And she let me, which is shocking because I didn't get to miss school for sickness. But and I always tell the kids, like, I thought I won that battle sort of, but then I had to give the speech the next day anyway. And then all by myself, and, you know, my speech teacher in high school, who's a mentor of mine still, but, you know, as hard as that was a pivotal moment for me, like where I learned I could do it. Like I could do it, even though it was scary. I could do it. Cause I was not like an outgoing kind of kid in that sense. So I always think about those kind of kids, you know, some kids are sort of born for the spotlight and want it at them all the time. Some not so much, but we want all those kids to participate in these things. That's what's important. So
right. Interesting then that you've come to, again, these performance-based activity, right? Whether it be speech or whether it be drama to, again, I think that we associate that with being things that, again, people who are more extroverted that naturally kind of are seeking the spotlight in that way. Is that something that kind of that grew with you a little bit?
Yeah. You know, it's so funny because theater never made me nervous. I did that from when I was a little kid and always wanted to be in plays and musicals. And I think the difference is it didn't bother me to be somebody else. Like I could put on a costume and be somebody else, but to stand up in front of your sophomore speech class and just be you, for me, that's harder. Like I could be in front, at least at 15 years old or whatever I was then, I could more easily be in an auditorium of 400 people and be, you know, this character in this musical than just be me up at a podium in front of 25 other people my age. That was always harder for me. So I think part of, I mean, there's lots of reasons why I chose this as my career, but I think part of that is because I had teachers along the way that helped me figure all that out and learn that I loved this. I had a couple really important mentors in that world, and I hope to be hopefully helping kids do that same sort of thing. So,
yeah. And cause you also, you know, direct the fall play and musical at Morris. It's still winter. So have we started spring musical stuff already?
We have a little, we're doing the show Big Fish.
Okay. Yeah.
Weeks ago, my vocal director, Kim Strzok, has been working with the kids on some music. Speech for me ends on Saturday at State. Sunday, take the day off. And then Monday, I start musical practice. So so we're starting to stage the top of the show Monday at 3:00. So it never stops.
Yeah, so, gosh, you get that beautiful one day between things, right? Before the brutal schedule keeps on moving, huh?
Yeah, and I get to go see a show that day because my daughter's in a play at college right now. So that day off, still theater focused. So
always immersive. Always. That's awesome. Well, I wanted to ask you already kind of alluded to about, you know, the reasons that you became a teacher, the mentors that you had. You know, obviously that's one of the things that the show is built on, is that, you know, pretty much everyone has had a teacher in their life who helped them become who they are, help them all in all sorts of ways. And I'm curious for you, again, who are those names that immediately come to mind for you when you think about the, you know, the educators that you've had who've inspired you? Again, whether they're teachers that you had growing up or all the way through education, whether it's folks that you work with now, anyone.
There's a few names that the first name that always comes to mind when I get asked that question is a woman named Carol Hughes. It's probably not going to be a surprise, but she was my speech coach in high school, and she was my, my AP English teacher in my senior year of high school. I mentioned I was already kind of a shy kid, but sort of like kids now, my friends kind of dragged me into the first speech meeting, and I was not super sold on it. Even the first year I did it because my friends were in it, but I didn't really put a whole lot into it. I didn't think it was really for me. But Mrs. Hughes was a person who, when I started having her as my coach as a sophomore and then definitely into my junior, senior year, She just had such high expectation. And she, you know, when you rehearsed with her, you felt so valued and like you were so important. And, you know, in a half hour coaching slot, I would leave there feeling like, oh my gosh, I just learned so much and I feel so much better about what I'm doing. And, you know, eventually that started leading to medals and trophies, which is not what it's really all about, but obviously instant gratification.
Nice. Yeah.
But she kind of scared me a little bit. She was like this probably not even 5 foot tall woman. And her husband was actually one of our coaches too. He was our superintendent at the time and was our extemporaneous coach, which was really cool. But as an AP English teacher too, she just was someone that taught me a level of interpreting literature and talking about literature that I hadn't experienced before until I got into that AP class. And I'd always been a big reader, but I'd never looked at literature the way that she asked us to do. And, you know, she never settled for anything less than our best and found ways to get that out of you, even when you didn't think you could do what she asked. And that was always really meaningful for me. And my senior year of high school was the year she retired from teaching. You know, as I looked at her reflect on her career, as I got to see her think about all of that, she was very inspirational in me realizing, like, this is what I want to do. Like, I always knew I wanted to be a teacher. I just always did. But she was really inspirational, like, in being like that, like, confirming, like, I want to do this. I can't say enough about her. And I don't know if I'd be doing any of this if it weren't for her today. Like, I might be teaching, but I don't know that I'd be coaching or anything. I feel a very onus to keep the Morris speech like legacy strong because she's the one that started that program in the mid 80s. And, you know, the ball's been passed a couple times and now it's to me. And I want to make sure that, you know, I've always tried to kind of have the mantra of, I want to leave things better than when I found them. So she put a pretty high bar there. On speech, but I'm trying to you know keep that legacy alive.
Well, it's interesting too about that you, one of the things that stuck out to you is that she always expected a lot from you. That you know she challenged you, and you know almost was a little bit scary at times.
Yeah, like
that's nothing that's difficult to like you know to foster an environment where that is like really helpful, where you're able to do that and not just scare people off. You know.
And she had that right balance of like, I knew she cared for me. I knew she loved me as her student. Like she wanted everything that was best for me. And like, I remember one time, this is a goofy story, but I was in her AP English class. And again, I was really good, like little student. I always did my homework, but for whatever reason, we had to write a poem and I didn't write it. And I felt bad. And I was, you know, nervous when she collected everything and I didn't have anything to hand in and she didn't say anything in the moment. And I was like, okay. And I went down to play practice and was sitting, you know, in the audience waiting to go on stage. And all of a sudden she tapped my shoulder and she said, what are you doing down here? And I said, I'm at practice. And she said, you didn't turn your poem in. And I said, I know, I'm sorry. And she said, my room now, go write it. And at the time, you know, but I think about that moment, like, I wasn't mad. I wasn't upset. Like she just wasn't going to take, she like knew I could do better than that. And I never turned in another late assignment in her class. I can promise you that. But, you know, she just, because she had that relationship with you that you knew how much she cared, it was okay. Like it didn't scare me away that she did that.
Is she also the reason that you are teaching English as well?
Yeah. Her English class, her AP English class was, it was kind of an intimidating room because she would put you in a circle and you just discussed all hour. And I had her class seventh hour, and I remember like we would send somebody to kind of scout sixth hour the hour before if she had put the desks in a circle, because if she had, you knew that you were discussing and you better know that book or that poem or that whatever it was. So
you sent out a reconnaissance team.
That was our thing. We'd be like, oh my gosh. And we didn't have phones or anything to text. Like you had to try to find people, like the desks are in a circle. But again, like that level of discussion was fascinating to me. And I had wonderful teachers all the way, but like the depth of AP English was fascinating for me. And, Yeah, I think she's a big reason why I'm an English teacher too. And I had other wonderful English teachers along the way too. Judy Miller is another name I would mention. She was my speech teacher in high school and my English teacher my sophomore year. And Judy's still a dear friend of mine. She lives here in Morris. We've been in plays together, done some community theater together and stuff. But she was someone, Mrs. Hughes was typically very serious and Mrs. Miller was kind of the more silly, fun teacher. But not to say that that didn't mean that, you know, you weren't, again, high expectation, really creative lesson plans, loved coming to her class, always felt very nurtured, and she got to know her students very well. And so she's someone else that I think, as far as an English teacher, I would talk about being someone that definitely was very inspirational to me too.
Do you still put the, in your own classroom, do you put the desks in a circle?
I do sometimes. Yeah, I do sometimes. Not as often as Mrs. Hughes did, but sometimes. Yes, yes.
I hope that there's some, you hope that they're not necessarily using their cell phones for this, right. But like, I hope there's some scouting, advanced scouting that's happening.
Now it would be desks in a circle.
Yeah, exactly.
I think she might have a quiz today.
Yeah, we alluded to that, you know, you went to Morris. And now you've been teaching there for quite some time. And we've had a few people on the show that have gone back and taught at their alma mater. And I think that's such a fascinating perspective to have. I don't know, was that early in your career that you came back to Morris? Or?
So I graduated from Morris in 1992 and then went to college, obviously. When I got out of college, I worked at the school I student taught at for a year. So that was in Island, Illinois. So I stayed there. I got married right after that, and my husband was in the military. So kind of moved around for a couple years. And then I taught at a school called Crete Moni High School, which was a South suburban school. I was there for 5 years and then came here. So, and I'm grateful. There weren't openings, or if there were, it wasn't at a time I could apply to work at Morris, but I'm always very grateful now that I'm grateful every day that I work here. I love this place very much, but I'm always grateful I have the perspective of working somewhere else too, and seeing students and teachers and administrators in different places. Like I'm grateful that I sort of have, I'm going to, taught here probably 30 years by the time I retire, but I'm glad I had a few years somewhere else to kind of compare, contrast, and, I loved the other places I taught to, but Morris has some really special things that I really value because I've seen some other places. So, so I'm very grateful that I have that perspective, but it is really great to come back and teach at a place that did a lot for me, in a town that did a lot for me, not just Morris High School. I went to the Catholic grade school here in town, Immaculate Conception School too. And, still try to, I sat on their school board for a while and my daughter attended there, and just trying to give back to both that school and this school that did a whole lot for me as a young person. So it's been nice to feel like you're kind of connecting and giving those things back.
Yeah, it's interesting because obviously, depending on the experience that people had at school, they may or may not be reluctant to want to go back to their school. I mean, we talked about all the teachers that you had, right, that inspired you or that helped you in Morris. It's just got to be interesting. Like, I'm sure when you came back originally and as you've, been at Morris for as long as you have been, it's probably given you a lot of opportunity to, specifically reflect back on your own experiences, right? To like have it in a more concrete way where you were like, I was literally here.
Yeah. And I tell them that, like in my speech class, like I literally took speech in this room. And for those of you sitting there nervous and scared, like I was that kid. I tell them that story I told you usually about, trying to get out of a speech and things like that. And because that's true, like that's absolutely true stuff. And, they think that's like 100 years ago and it's a long time ago, but those are really important memories and foundational memories for me. And, like I said, I think Morris High School is a great place. I wanted to come back here and teach partly for myself. I wanted my daughter, to go here. She graduated from Morris High School too and had a great experience. And, it's like I said, it's a great place to work and to work with kids. We have amazing kids. So.
Yeah. And it's obviously with your drama and with the plays that you guys get to kind of invite the community to be a part of that too. And I think that's really fascinating too, because I've had the fortune that I've actually had the chance to see multiple different school plays at multiple schools over the past year, which is not something I typically get to do, but it kind of just happened. And I was just really happy to see and impressed about how just great the performances were, how fun they were, how well done they were, how good the performances were. And my immediately thought after both of them was, I hope the community knows about this, right? Like, I hope people know about this, that they can come and see this for themselves. And I think that's fascinating too, about just like how you engage kind of the greater community in all like the art that you guys are putting on.
Yeah. And I, you know, that's something I think just for everybody, not just in Morris, but like, if you're looking for something great to do, like go see high school theater. And I know people are probably like, oh, I don't know about that. I think, like I try to go see shows in the area too. And, you know, kids are so committed and they care so much and they put so much into those shows. And like you said, it's, you know, a couple hours of great fun to go support. And I always tell my alumni that when they leave my program, like wherever you end up in this world and, you know, whether you go on and you're starring on Broadway, which I don't have anyone doing that, or, you know,
not yet.
Business, well, I know, I'd love it someday. You know, whatever you do though, like support the arts in your community. I always tell them, like, that's something I want you to take from this program is, you know, volunteer as a speech judge at a tournament or go see, you know, community theater in the area you're in or the high school play or musical. Because, you know, the arts were really important to you at this time in your life. And that's a way you can always support and keep those things going. So I love when they'll message me like, hey, I'm in college and I went and I went and saw this play, or it's nice to hear those things because they're keeping that going. And I think that's really important. So,
and you mentioned that your daughter's in college and she's performing.
She is. Yeah. She's a theater major in college. So, well, English theater major. Yeah. Yeah.
So. Wow. So you got to coach her then?
I did. I did get to coach. Yeah. Yeah. That was interesting.
I can imagine. Yeah, it's a different, even though you know, obviously you're trying to keep everyone at the same expectations. It is a different dynamic. It has to be.
She was always very reluctant to have me watch her stuff. Like when she did junior high speech, everyone would be like, oh my gosh, her speech, you must have helped her. I'd be like, I have no idea what she's doing. Like she doesn't, she's very independent, which is great. So, but yeah, it was great to get to coach her at this level, and not just her, but like, you know, your child grows up with like that core group of friends. So you got to coach them too. So it's a different couple of years there where, you know, your kid and those kids that have all been like hung out at your house or they've gone to dances and, you know, you get to kind of get to hang out with them in a different way and work with them. It's pretty cool. Her experience with me, she was a 2021 grad. So COVID
oh, just
up.
A great time to graduate high school. Yeah,
a little bit tricky in there. So
yeah, for sure.
But you know, it's okay. We get through it. So
God bless you having to figure out how to do those virtual speech tournaments. I'm sure
that's a lot of people worked very hard to make that happen. I always say I will be proud of a lot of things when my career is over, I hope, but that's one of the biggest ones, and not just from me, but you know, that pivot to suddenly take us, because it would have been easy to just say, we're not going to do speech this year, it's too hard. But no one ever considered that. And the group of coaches throughout the state that worked hard to make that happen is really kind of mind blowing, because there was no playbook and not a lot of time to put it together. And everybody just said, let's figure it out, and did it. And do I want to go back and do a season like that? I do not. But I'm very grateful. You know, I'm very, very grateful. I know I use that word a lot, which I'm finding in this podcast, but I really am, because I just, like I said, it would have been easy to just kind of chalk that up to, we can't do that this year. And we didn't do that at all. So I'm very, very happy about that.
Yeah, that'll be one that obviously you don't want to relive, but like, I feel like at like the end of your career, it'd be fun to revisit. Sure, if you got any of those files still, watch some of those videos, be like, man, I can't believe we pulled that off.
And we, that year, I don't know how you quantify success, but that year we qualified every kid for the state tournament on our team. And the season started where they literally, you know, filmed a video, sent it to me. I uploaded it to SpeechWire. Someone judged it. No interaction. really hard to get kids into that. Like, that's tough. By the end of the season, when we got to the state series and the numbers were a little smaller, I could bring them in and they still had to film, but they could like each be in a different classroom. And then we could sit socially distanced at awards and watch someone on a Zoom screen give out awards. That all sounds wow.
We all lived some version of that. Yeah.
Yeah. One of my favorite moments will always be, and I have it on video and I post it every year on Facebook. It was just a few days ago. Watching those kids all learn they're going to state together in the auditorium with, you know, masks on their faces and spread apart. But just the, in a year that had so much difficulty and so many missed moments, like, I know if you ask those kids, they would tell you, like, that's one of the biggest bright spots of high school for me, even though it was weird. It just was such a moment I will never forget. You know, and no parents there watching or anything, just me, my assistant coach, and the dozen or so of them that were there that day. But it's just a treasured memory for me and always will be. And my daughter was part of that team too. So got to experience it as a mom too. But that aside, it was just kind of magical. It was like I remember just that night feeling like, thank you. Like, whatever got us to that point, thank you, because it made up for a lot of missed opportunities.
That's awesome that you got the video of that too.
Yeah, it's great. It's so great. Yeah.
Well, one of the last questions that we always like to ask people is, I'll frame the question specifically towards kind of the arts and then more broadly towards just like teaching in general. And so again, like, you teach literature, writing, and, you know, you've obviously drama, we've talked about speech, we've talked about just something about teaching specifically the arts that you just think is more important than some people realize, something you wish more people knew about it.
I hope more people value, and I'm not just talking about theater and speech, what I do, but music and dance and, you know, painting and sculpture and drawing, all those things, how important those things are, and how much I think people that do those things often put their hearts and souls into those things. That they're, you know, not always just little like hobby kind of things, that they're really meaningful and valuable. And for some students, I think are the thing that really kind of sustains them. You know, I have students that, you know, they come to school every day, and the biggest joy they're going to find that day is when they go to their art class or when they go, you know, play the trumpet in band or whatever it might be. So valuing the arts and understanding that I think a student's whole education, math, science, English, history, all those things, I mean, huge, of course, and, you know, have to be there. But I think all those things are really enhanced by the arts as well. And I just think that's, and like I said, kind of being not just a person that appreciates and values those things when you're in school, but beyond too, because I think society is better when people are hearing each other's stories and creating things together. And I just think that's all really beautiful stuff that in a world that's divided and crazy and, you know, all of that, I think the arts offer a really great place of learning and entertainment and maybe change. And if nothing else, just there's nothing wrong with just being entertained and finding something enjoyable. And I think the arts give us that. So,
yeah. I don't know. Well, you know, it's funny the way that you frame that, because I feel like we talked about how I was able to feature those students from the speech team. And we also did last fall, or, you know, so just a month or two ago, we featured a group of students in their school's first theater production over a decade, right? So I got to have both of those. Oh. And one of the ways that I, like, how I kind of pitched that segment in general was, like, A, it's always want to have more student voices featured, but also, like you said, it's not just that, it's a lot of times like the things that sustain students, the reasons that they come to school every day. And, you know, obviously students have passion for math or for biology or for social studies, all sorts of different things you can come to that from. Maybe it's just a little bit more outward with the arts sometimes, where you can kind of see that, and that kind of life affirming moments of, you know, seeing that passion that students put into it. But again, like, the reasons why people get up every day and are excited to come to school.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. And all the things that go with the arts too, you know, that's where they make connections with people. And, you know, my kids always talk about whenever we reflect on a speech season, one of the things that they always will say, or theater or whatever, is that the speech and theater program at Morris High School is a place where there's a place for everybody and you're going to be accepted for who you are. And like, there's not a lot that makes me prouder as an advisor than to hear them say those things, because that's more sustaining than, you know, a great production or winning trophies and medals. Again, not that that's not great, because it is, it's fun to do that. But when they say things like that, I'm like, okay, that's something you're going to carry with you and is going to sustain our program and our culture too. So I love that.
Right. That's so, like, success on a deeper, more fundamental level.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then a little bit more generally, what's just something about being a teacher you wish more people knew?
I think how much work and worry and I'm not just talking about myself. Like, I look at my colleagues, I look at the teachers my daughter had throughout her journey of all of it. I just, how much heart and passion and soul and all of it teachers put into what they do. You know, there's that old, you know, adage that, you know, it's summer's off and blah, blah, blah. And I can't remember the last time I had a summer off, by the way, but you know, I like, my husband has a job that's amazing, but like his job starts at a certain time and it ends at a certain time. Teaching is not that. You know, I may get to school at 7:15 in the morning and technically I'm done at 2:55. I'm usually here working, coaching way after that, even if I'm not. It's planning things at home. It's working on lessons and tests and how am I going to get this across to this group or this group? And, you know, I think the majority of teachers out there, that's the life that they live. And it's a constant, how can I do this differently? How can I do this better? How can I reach every student? And I'm not sure I ever realized that as a student, like just how much my teachers put into what I did and or to what I was learning and how much they truly care about me and my community and my school. I think that's really a characteristic of Morris High School, where I teach too, that we have a faculty and an administration that really care very deeply. Like, we have a new principal this year who I think has been a huge positive for our building, because she's so positive and she works so hard. And I think she models what it is to be a really effective educator. And she's only been here, you know, half a year, but I look up to that already so much. So we're all learning from each other too.
That was my conversation with Andrea Gustafson. She's an English teacher, director of the theater department, and speech coach over at Morris High School. Thank you so much for listening to Teacher's Lounge. And as always, feel free to nominate a teacher in your life to be on the show. It's how we get all of our great guests like Andrea. You can send them our way to teacherslounge@niu.edu. Wherever you're hearing this podcast, please consider subscribing, leaving a rating, or sharing it. It's the best way to get even more perspectives like Andrea on the show. You can subscribe to our Teacher's Lounge newsletter over at wnij.org if you want to keep up to date with everything we've got going on with the show. A big thanks to the Northern Illinois band Kind Ofs for providing the music you hear each and every episode of the show. And I've been your host, Peter Mudlin, and we'll be back with even more Teacher's Lounge very soon. See ya.